You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of July 5th, 2016, and episode number 272. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Well, July 5th. I hope you had a fun and safe 4th of July weekend. And happy 240th birthday to the United States. It's kind of weird. It's almost like we're back in that time frame again, trying to escape tyranny and control from our government. And trying to strike it out on our own again, but hey, we'll kind of leave that topic for some other people. I do have some controversial topics though that we are going to talk about today. Usually, you kind of avoid that stuff, but hey, we're on the radio; we got to do that kind of stuff, right? And this week's news also includes a 16-year-old girl discovers a rare bird. How cool is that? A mountain lion in Massachusetts. We'll also talk about the MUFON sighting statistics from June. And don't cross the streams. Uh-oh, is that a Ghostbusters reference? Actually, no. It's one of those controversial topics that we're going to talk about a little later on in the show. It has to do with the weather, so that's maybe that'll give it away. We'll also have the Book of the Week, conferences, conventions, and we're going to touch on paranormal unity. Yeah, talk about controversy. There it is. This week's news is brought to you by the International Cryptozoology Museum, located in Portland, Maine. It's the world's only cryptozoology museum. The International Cryptozoology Museum opened in 2003 and contains rare and original items collected by Lauren Coleman, the director of the museum. Visit the International Cryptozoology Museum now at 4 Thompson's Point Road, Suite 106. It's no longer at 11 Avon Street in downtown Portland, Maine, as those doors have closed forever back on June 21st, and it's now down by the water and is bigger and better than ever. The museum is open from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. 6 days a week, but be sure to check out the website before you go out there. If you're going to head out there anytime soon, find out the hours just in case. And for more information, please visit cryptozoologymuseum.com. Excited about that. I'd love to head out there and check it out. And my book is there as well. Handbook for the Amateur Cryptozoologist can be purchased from the International Cryptozoology Museum in Portland, Maine. Yeah, I'm going to drive all the way out there and buy my book. Really, it sounds crazy, but that's what I want to do. Oh, boy. So what is going on? It's slow this week. I know it's July 4th. Everyone's partying, drinking, shooting off fireworks, eating hot dogs and hamburgers. I've been watching a lot of baseball lately with the Cleveland Indians, doing a lot of kayaking. I was outside all day today, out in the lake kayaking, so I'm like sunbaked. But what else is going on? Well, later on this month, can't believe already, July 29th through the 31st, I'm going to be at the Kecksburg UFO Festival in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, home to the purported UFO crash in December 1965. John Ventry and Stan Gordon will also be there at that event. I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be really exciting. I've always wanted to go to this festival. I think the biggest reason is I just want to get a picture of that UFO that is by the fire department. Pretty cool. I'll also be at the 4th Annual Strange Encounters of Pennsylvania event that takes place on August 20th in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, home of the big flood. And John Ventry and Stan Gordon will also be at that event, plus a few local speakers will also be on hand to talk about strange weather, which we're going to talk about strange weather tonight. And they'll also talk about other strange things that happen in Pennsylvania. Lots of strange things happen in Pennsylvania. And we're going to hopefully, I should have time later on toward the end of the show to talk about all the other paranormal conferences and conventions that are coming up. Usually kind of run short on time. Normally this time of the year, it would probably more than likely be this exact episode. Usually I do a quick recap or a whole episode of a recap of the paranormal news for the first half of the year. We are headed toward the second half of the year already, if you can believe that. We're halfway done. It's crazy. And then, of course, as you know, at the end of the year, I will do a top 10 paranormal news insider paranormal news countdown, however that goes, and count down the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2016. But I just kind of thought that I'm just going to skip that this year. Last year, I did a mid-season year review, and unfortunately, it was the last episode ever to appear on WQTT of the Paranormal News Insider. So maybe I want to avoid that now. So you're just going to have to wait till December for the big countdown. Yeah, I'm announcing it already. It's coming up. But before we hit that, let's jump into some cryptid news. And I mentioned at the top of the show, a 16-year-old girl did some discovering of a bird. Now, how did that happen? Kind of happened in a weird way. And it's kind of, I don't want to say hypocritical of science, but maybe I'll recap that at the end of the story here. Now, I've mentioned this year, a few young people this year already in a few shows, we're talking about some interesting work that young people have done, from being involved with cryptozoology to possibly finding Maya ruins. Well, this week, a 16-year-old girl caught footage of a bird that was thought to have been extinct in the wild. Yeah, only in the wild. The video is only a few seconds long and shows a bird with a long tail flying from a tree and then goes behind another tree. It's real quick. I don't know if you've seen it. I'll post the YouTube video at the end of the segment here in the chat room. So if you're listening live and you're not in the chat room, you might want to make your way to the chat room. You don't have to chat if you don't want to. Just say hi, and you can just sit there and listen. Or you can join the conversations that usually take place in the chat room. Now, the video was published on YouTube by BirdLife International. And the subject of the video is the Spix macaw, which is listed as critically endangered and thought to be extinct in the wild, as the last one was seen in the year 2000. Yet, like I said, it's only extinct in the wild. There are 130 Spix macaws held in a captive breeding program to help attempt to keep them from becoming extinct overall. And sure, there is some in some private collections out there as well, which may have something to do with this particular story. And if you see a picture of this blue macaw, it might look a little familiar, as it shared the main characters of the animated movie Rio, which came out back in 2011. The Spix macaw is an important bird to the Brazilian people, and this sighting led to a search using a WhatsApp group to ensure that no dealers could enter and trap the bird for illegal sale, which is a hot thing to do, I guess. Sadly, most birds like that you see, unfortunately, are grabbed, tossed in bags, and illegally smuggled out of South America to the United States. Sad but true. A farmer saw the bird on June 18th. And Lourdes Oliveira and her 16-year-old daughter, Demilis, woke up before dawn and searched for the bird in a local forest. They found the bird about 6:20 a.m. and filmed it. And again, it's real quick. It's only a few seconds long. The video that's on YouTube is like a minute something, but the actual footage itself is like 6 seconds long. So they just kind of replay it. They play it slow motion and do all kinds of cool stuff with it. Now, the Spix macaw was hunted and trapped mainly for sale for pet birds, as well as had their habit eliminated by the elimination of specific trees, as well as the building of a dam, not to mention the northerly movement of Africanized bees that are competing for nesting sites. And this led to the demise of the bird from its home range in Brazil. BirdLife International does think, however, that the bird sighted might have been one that was a released captive bird, maybe one from a private collection somebody had in their house or something. Maybe they felt guilty. I don't know. Speculation. The captive breeding program still continues and hopes that birds can be reintroduced when the ecosystem and the number of birds will be able to sustain themselves in the wild. And yeah, if you've seen that movie Rio, that's the birds. Yeah. Obviously, those are cartoon imitations, and the real macaws, Spix macaws, they don't talk or anything or have luggage or travel in jets or whatever else they did on the TV or the movie there. But it's good that they brought a little bit of attention to the macaw through cartoon, at least, for the general public to be aware that these birds are pretty endangered. What else in cryptozoology? Well, we have a mountain lion on the loose in Massachusetts, of all places. Kind of weird, right? Well, a potential mountain lion, and I say again, potential mountain lion. It's not been proven as of this time, was sighted in Webster, Massachusetts during the last week in June. Shirley Ford saw the large cat and was able to take five pictures of it. Now, the best two were then copied by an animal control officer who then posted them to Facebook. Facebook. I mean, what else are you going to do? You find a strange cat and, I mean, come on, Facebook is the perfect place for it. Now, neither photograph shows a definitive look at the large cat. I've seen these two pictures. And it's really frustrating because you don't really get you get a good look at the tail, but that's not enough. I'd like to see the paws or the outline of the head or looking at it frontward, but not enough detail for me to go in really in either direction. Either it is a mountain lion or it's not. I really don't know myself. But a lot of people believe that it's nothing more than a house cat, which is usually what happens in these particular cases. People see a large cat and they automatically assume it's a mountain lion or even a lion because it's a little bit bigger than their Fluffy the cat that's in their house. And you know, when a cat's outside, when feral cats live, they do grow a little bit bigger than what you were used to. Plus, we're not used to seeing cats running around outside as much as we are running down our hallways and in our kitchens and the litter boxes and all that stuff. So sometimes people get a little perspective. They get a little mixed up when they see these cats. And yeah, unfortunately, 9 times out of 10, these are just house cats, especially when we're not 100% from a video or from photographs and there is no actual casts or prints to back up the sighting as of yet. But the good thing is there were 5 witnesses who saw the cat that afternoon, and they all agreed it was very large, with at least one person describing it as the size of a German Shepherd. That's pretty significant, because if you would have said, you know, Schnauzer or something, then that would have been very convincing. So a German Shepherd, and even as a puppy, those are pretty big dogs. Now, the Connecticut Mountain Lion website initially stated that it was a house cat, yet pending further investigation. But now they've changed their view and their headline a little bit based on the various witnesses' statements. These witnesses are very adamant that this was, in fact, a mountain lion, very large, not a house cat, but there's still work to be done. They're still hoping to use an object for size comparison in the exact spot where the photograph was taken to help confirm or deny what was potentially seen. Mountain lion sightings have been taking place within the last week at other nearby communities. So if it is in fact a mountain lion, it's more than likely just a wandering male. And the story hit the internet, I'd say about 5 days ago, 5 or 6 days ago at this point. And I searched this afternoon and I found no updates on this particular story. I was hoping that they would confirm the size, or at least say that they've used an object for comparison, or maybe found some tracks, or another story would pop up in that particular area, but no dice. Hasn't happened yet, so we'll still have to keep an eye out on this to see if this is, in fact, a wandering male. 9 times out of 10, they're going to say it came from the west, and it's just lost, and it's a lone cat. All these sightings are probably more than likely one cat anyway. I do agree with that, but a lot of cats are making their way eastward. Now, there's this little problem that they pop into when you hit around Missouri and other states. It's this big river called the Mississippi River. Long name and a long river, and it's pretty wide in most places. And it's pretty much impossible for these cats to get across. And that's why they don't really infiltrate the east that much. However, Canada has been just annihilated with cat sightings, large cat sightings, mountain lion sightings, and they've gone eastward. So I think that these mountain lions moving from the west to the east, they're now coming down south. And you know, I hate to say it, but Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, Ohio, where I sit right now, these are areas where the mountain lion, cougar, catamount, whatever you want to call it, puma, panther, where their home range used to be. Now, there used to be the eastern cougar, which is was declared officially extinct back in 2011, although they hadn't seen one since, I want to guess, the 1930s. I can't remember. One was shot in Maine and stuffed, and they were just hunted to extinction here on the East Coast. People were very afraid of them. I mean, you should be. They're ambush predators, and I think we did a I don't know if I did the story, but I did cover a story probably online about a boy who was attacked, a small child that was attacked by a mountain lion out west, and that happens, unfortunately, quite a bit. But my personal theory is that I think that the introduction of wolves in the 1990s, wolves have just expanded and exploded out west, and they're actually being hunted to trim the number of wolves in packs. And again, wolves are pack hunters. They're dogs, and dogs and cats, we know they don't always get along. Maybe they do at your house, but out in the wild, they generally don't. So I think that the mountain lions are actually making their way eastward. Obviously, there's a lot out west, California, British Columbia, Washington, Oregon, all, you know, the west, and they hit the ocean, and a lot of wolves that are also along the western edge of British Columbia out there, along the coast. So, you know, where else are they going to go? They're going backward. They're going east. They're coming back home where they came from. And I think that's what we're seeing. And the females don't travel as far as the males. So the males are looking for new territory. They're exploring. They're coming out here. And the females, they should be behind, you know, shortly. But I think I'm not one for controversies or conspiracies, I should say, but I do think that there is some sort of conspiracy going on with mountain lions in many states here on the East Coast, especially here in Ohio. I know Pennsylvania, I've talked to a number of people about that as well. So something's going on. I think they know where these cats are at, and they're doing something, and they're not telling us. But stay tuned. Maybe they'll find one that's established itself, cubs and all. So now we're going to jump into UFO news, and I'm really excited about this, to be able to cover the MUFON sighting statistics within a week of them actually being wrapped up. I know before last year, like, it would take me a whole month. I'd be a month behind by the time I actually got the sighting statistics. I don't know why. They used to just email them all around, even to us MUFON members, but not anymore. I don't. It's very sporadic. Every now and again, I do get it, but it's been a few months. So the MUFON sighting statistics for the month of June are already here. And it's exciting. And big thanks, huge thanks. You know, I mentioned how hard it is to get these things. So I kind of had to network a little bit. And I have networked in the past with some directors, state directors, to try to get the statistics. But, you know, those are busy people. I get it. So big thanks to MUFON field investigator and Paranormal News Insider fan. She's in the chat room right now, Audrey Hamilton. She's based out of Erie, Pennsylvania. And MUFON, if you're not aware, I'm throwing this acronym around. There's so many acronyms in the paranormal world. MUFON, spelled M-U-F-O-N, is the Mutual UFO Network and is the largest UFO investigative body in the world. It's trying to be worldwide, but unfortunately, it's looking at the statistics, it's mostly just the United States. But hopefully, over time, it's going to continue to grow and it'll become more of a worldwide power, which we kind of need to an extent to gather these sighting reports and to investigate them objectively and kind of put all this information together. I mean, can you imagine if there was a ghost group that was worldwide that disseminated all the case reports through one group? That'd be kind of cool. Not going to happen. We'll talk about that later on in the show. But for more information about MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, you can check out their website at MUFON.com. Who doesn't have a website this day and age? 2016, come on. MUFON.com, M-U-F-O-N.com. You can become a field investigator yourself or just a member like myself and get a lot of really cool behind-the-scenes stuff, newsletters and access to different goodies on their website, a discount on some stuff on their store and things like that. So looking at, well, take a quick peek at last month first to kind of get you in the mood for it. May, there was 545 worldwide reports. I'm looking at my predictions. I've made predictions the last 3 months. I was way off in April. I was pretty close in May. So where am I going to be here in June? May, the month of May, like I mentioned, 545 worldwide reports, 395 from the United States. And it's actually was a dip from April. April had 561 worldwide reports and 403 U.S. reports. So a little bit of a drop in both categories there. And believe it or not, the biggest month so far of the year, worldwide-wise, is 687 with the month of January. Rather strange. And also here in the U.S., 502 reports from January as well. Now, last year, wow, June was the largest month in MUFON history with 1,402 worldwide reports, with 1,180 coming from the U.S. alone. And then it kind of dipped off after that, and it's kind of gone back to what I would call back to normal. And back to normal is anywhere between pretty much 675 worldwide reports up to about, I don't know, about 700-something. That's usually they kind of run the gamut between those two. So last year when you started to see it go up and up, I think May it was like starting to go 900. It's huge. Something was up. And it peaked out the next month in June and just kind of fell off after that. So this year, what are the numbers this year? Well, according to the MUFON's case management system, there was 604 total worldwide sightings for the month of June in 2016. Now, what was my prediction? I predicted 574 worldwide sightings. So, yeah, it doesn't sound like I was that close, but in reality, if you do the math, that's 95% accuracy. It's pretty good. I'm going to play the lottery. Maybe not those numbers, but that's pretty good, 95% accuracy. Now, I had predicted 411 sightings in the United States, and according to MUFON, there was 453. So a little off there, a little more off than the first one. It's about 91% accuracy. Close, no cigar. I mean, that's just kind of, it's not that great, I don't think. But not bad overall, I think. I was close. Come on. Canada was second with 52 reports. United Kingdom was third with 23 reports. And Australia turned in 15. Germany, 6. And 31 other countries turned in 5 or less reports, with 20 of those only turning in one report. And that goes back to what I said about MUFON's not quite established worldwide as of yet. And a lot of these other countries have their own UFO reporting centers that, that's important for them as well. I just wish that there was a way to get all of these reporting centers to funnel everything into one area so that we'd have a better glimpse of a worldwide angle on what's going on all over the place. Just so, I mean, obviously it's not scientific that these are all genuine UFO sightings, as well as I've mentioned this before. Now, just because there's 411 sightings in the month of June does not mean that that was how many potential UFOs were seen. Some of these are explainable. A majority of them are probably explainable. And some of these sightings may have actually happened months or years ago. They just happened to have been reported last month. So keep all that in mind as you're thinking about these statistics. And some of these may have even been multiple reports of the same sighting. So put all that in your hat and think about that for a little bit. A lot of information there. But state by state, California is always number one. And the reason for that is looking at the list of U.S. states by population, 318 million people plus live in the United States, with a majority percentage-wise living in California. So, of course, California should lead the way. They should always have the highest number of reports. They had 49 reports out of 411. Texas turned in 26. Arizona had 25. Florida had 24. Washington State had 23. Michigan and New York had 19. Ohio and Pennsylvania had 18 each. Illinois had 17. Oregon and Colorado turned in 13. Missouri and Minnesota had 12 each. North Carolina with 11. Massachusetts, New Jersey, and Iowa had 10 each. And Wisconsin, Nevada, and Indiana had 7 each. And if I didn't mention your state, well, you had less than 7. Or you didn't have any at all. What's going on? Get out there. Look up. They're out there. Now, one thing that MUFON used to do that I like to do, I've kind of done this on my own, is looking at these sighting statistics, the number of sightings. And again, it's you look at California and you're like, wow, 49 sightings. That's a lot. But if you look at it per 100,000 people, which is per capita, it's not that impressive. California, if you look at their 49 sightings for the month of June, that's only 0.13 per capita. That means out of every 100,000 people that live in the state of California, only 0.13 actually saw a UFO. That's like their hand. Only a hand out of a person actually saw a UFO. I know that doesn't sound very impressive, 0.13 out of 100,000, but it kind of gives you a true glimpse of which state actually had the highest percentage of sightings per people that live there. And last month, it was Alaska with 0.54, with four sightings, just four sightings alone. Now, this month, Alaska had 5 sightings. So that bumps them up to 0.68 per capita for the month of June. That's pretty impressive. That's the highest that I've gotten since I've been doing the per capita breakdown this year. Looks like Vermont had 0.64 one month. So Alaska having 0.68, that's pretty significant. I mean, 5 is not that many, but there's not that many people that live in Alaska either. And then you think about how large Alaska really is. So it's kind of impressive, I think. The state of Wyoming, they had 0.51 with their three sightings. Arizona was next with 0.37 with 25 sightings, which a lot of sightings and having a high per capita is impressive. Alaska having five sightings with a 0.68. The 0.68 is impressive, but only five sightings, not really that impressive. Washington had 0.325 with 23 sightings, and Oregon had 0.327 with 13 sightings. Iowa had 0.32 with 10 sightings, and it just kind of goes downhill from there. So again, that's your MUFON sighting statistics for the month of June. And huge thanks. Thank you again, Audrey Hamilton, for this month's sighting statistics. She was the first and only guest here on the Paranormal News Insider. And speaking of the Paranormal News Insider, I just want to let you know that you're listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com. And yeah, you're listening to me, Dr. Brian D. Parsons, here on the Paranormal News Insider, here on WCJV. So yeah, that's your MUFON sighting statistics. And I was looking at the schedule here. I guess Frank is out again. Good grief. Man, wish I could travel like him. I do my traveling on my off days, but I make sure I'm back here for you guys each week, each Tuesday. So looking here. Oh, yeah, I got big news. I forgot right here in front of me as I'm scrolling through the screen. Now, kind of to sum stuff up here, I do this show, and I do it live. So it's a radio show. It's an internet radio show, however you want to look at that. Right here, WCJV, like I mentioned, and you can listen live. You can get in the chat room, and yeah, so here it is live. Now, what happens after this is Cindy, our producer for the network, she does her magic and creates the show as a it goes to Mixcloud essentially, and you can download that on an app. You can read it. You can hear the show on the web, and that's not just my show. That's all the shows here on WCJV, which is expanding quickly. There's a lot of new shows coming up, so stay tuned. If you love paranormal programming, even the political stuff, hey, you might find a great show. I don't know. Hopefully you like mine. If you don't, well, can't help you there. I do my best. But keep an ear out, man. There's a lot of great shows coming up here. So I do advertise Mixcloud a little bit. It's on my website. And also through the website, I hook up with Podbean. Now, before Podbean, all my episodes were like 5 or 10 minutes long. So I uploaded everything to the ParanormalNewsInsider.com or ParanewsInsider.com, Paranormal News Insider website. But starting from episode 231, I started putting everything on Podbean. Now, Podbean gives me the ability to push out my show myself through other networks and other arenas that allow you, the listener, to have your opportunity. You know, we all have our thing that we like. Some people like listening to, maybe you like Mixcloud. Maybe you do listen to Podbean as an app. Maybe Stitcher or Spreaker. Maybe iTunes. I don't know. And all of those things are available. If you have any of those that I just mentioned, you can listen to the Paranormal News Insider after I upload it to Podbean. Or Mixcloud, it comes out pretty much right away, right after the show's over. Then within a few minutes, poof, it's up there. So if you miss the show, that's your quickest way. And I always link that, the Mixcloud, to the ParanewsInsider.com website. But I got an email. I was out on the lake today, as I mentioned earlier, and using software on my phone to track where I'm at and the distance and how fast I'm going and this and that and all these other things. Yeah, it's great. The depth of the water and everything is pretty cool. But anyway, I get this email from, I think it was Spreaker. I think it was. Can't remember now. Anyway, yeah, Spreaker. It told me that I've been approved. I'm like, oh, yeah, proof for what? Sure, it's something great. But it's actually something I did a while ago and kind of forgot about. Spreaker, if you don't know, is related to iHeartRadio. So I'm excited to announce that the Paranormal News Insider can now be heard via iHeartRadio, and should be released in like 3 days, 72 hours, they said. So you're hearing it first, that the next episode that gets uploaded tonight, you're going to be able to hear it on iHeartRadio. Really cool. I don't know. I've always wanted to have a show on iHeartRadio. I don't think we ever made it there. The other show that I was on, the Grand Dark Conspiracy, the show that, you know, this Paranormal News Insider was a part of for like, I don't know, 6 years, 7 years. So that's cool. But anyway, that's just another avenue for listeners to take in this show and hear what I have to say and get the news. Because, you know, like I said, everyone has their own way to listen to their shows. And I get it. I get it. We're all sticklers for different ways. So anyway, enough with that. That's my big news for the night. But other news, this is a little controversial of a topic. And kind of to preface this, anybody that follows me on Facebook knows that I don't generally comment or post things that are, I don't know, religion, politics. I don't really post anything like that because those things can easily create separation between people. People are very opinionated about those two topics and have very strong feelings for those. And if somebody makes fun of something or pushes a certain idea or topic or story or anything, sometimes that can lead to some issues, problems between people. And unfortunately for myself, I'm not only a regular person, but I'm also I'm not a paracelebrity or anything by any stretch of the imagination. But you know, I'm on a radio show. I've written books. I have a website. I'm a public speaker. So I'm kind of out there in the public a little bit. Kind of a, I guess you'd call me a minor celebrity, a minor local celebrity here in Ohio. But I don't know. I don't get identified when I go to the grocery store or anything like that. But you have to be careful, I guess, when you're in the public of things you say. Sometimes can hurt people's feelings. And I don't like getting into those arguments. So I just avoid it completely. And I guess one of another topic has over the years, it's kind of become another taboo subject. It's become one that people get really sore when you mention. They get really upset. And it has to do with the weather. What? What do you mean the weather? Isn't the weather something that we use as an icebreaker when we first meet somebody and we're kind of awkwardly trying to talk about something like, hey, what's up, dude? Yeah, nice day. Yeah, it's a nice day. Well, I guess that was the icebreaker before humans destroyed the planet and created global warming, right? That's the big topic. Everyone's talking about it. Global warming, climate change, whatever the tag is nowadays. 30 years ago, we were headed into a global ice age, but now we're warming up, I guess. I don't know. But now, news is, it seems that the world is about to come to an end. And you may wonder, why am I bothering to talk about climate change or global warming on a paranormal news show? Well, yeah, I guess it's a slow week, but we do talk about viral stuff. We do talk about things that are affecting the culture of life, of people. And as a paranormal investigator, people are talking about the weather. They are talking about some of these topics. And this also has to do with science, silly science and strange science and skepticism. But to me, I feel that this kind of fits in. It's strange. It's affecting the globe. It's affecting the world that we live in. And it could be strange. It could be us. It could be some other unknown force. So I think it kind of fits in. And when I first started the Paranormal News Insider, we used to have different designations. Well, one additional designation. I still do it the same way, in the same order. Cryptozoology, UFOs, ghosts. And then what I had was strange Earth stories. And I kind of got away from that over the years. I just kind of eliminated it from the lineup because it wasn't consistent. I wasn't always getting cool earthquake stories or volcano eruption stories. But then over the years, yeah, I've had quite a few cool things like sky noise and different things that I just mentioned. And now this year with the meteors coming in droves over the world, those are strange Earth stories. And I think that this climate change, global warming, whatever the trigger word is nowadays, does fit into this. Now, the world may not be coming to an end. I don't know. That's what a lot of people have said 20, 30 years ago. Al Gore predicted that where we're at right now in 2016, we'd all be like 20 feet underwater, and it hasn't happened. But according to blogger Robert Scribbler, our seasons are about to come to an end, especially winter. Now, Scribbler recently released a blog titled, quote, "Giant Gravity Waves to Mix Summer with Winter. Wrecked jet stream now runs from pole to pole," unquote. Well, he pulled the fire alarm where he thought he saw smoke. Scribbler stated, quote, "It's the very picture of weather weirding due to climate change, something that would absolutely not happen in the normal world, something that if it continues basically threatens seasonal integrity. You get this weather destabilizing and extreme weather generating mixing of seasons that is all part of a very difficult to deal with death of winter type scenario," unquote. Well, if the end of winter as we know it isn't depressing enough, another climate scientist named Paul Beckwith from the University of Ottawa chimed in on his own personal blog by saying, quote, "Our climate system behavior continues to behave in new and scary ways that we have never anticipated or seen before. Welcome to climate chaos. We must declare a global climate emergency," unquote. Wow. Okay. Beckwith went the extra mile and created a YouTube video full of colorful weather maps showing the jet stream as he struggled to interpret what he was seeing. And he added that there would be, quote, "massive hits to the food supply," unquote, and, quote, "massive geopolitical unrest," unquote. And this is all related to the jet streams merging, which they both claim has never happened before. It's unprecedented. It's unprecedented. And it's going to cause all these crazy things to happen. Dogs and cats playing together. Geopolitical unrest. Food supply crashing. Well, you know me. I do my research. I've been doing research on climate change and global warming for a long time. People that know me know that I love the weather, and I studied the weather for a number of years. Since I was a kid, I was kind of was obsessed with the weather for some reason. I don't know why, but I've never known if I was right or wrong. It seemed like I was always wrong about climate change and everything that's happening, and I hate being wrong. So I read. I read a lot. And I study a lot about climate, and I don't really talk about that. Study a lot of things that I don't talk about, I guess. But it's interesting. And I guess I'll save my opinion for the end of the story. But this is kind of what they call tabloid climatology. Now, through their blogs, they stand to make a little bit of money. I'm talking about Beckwith and Scribbler. Through the form of contributions, as well as through their political interests that will benefit. They'll stand to make gains based on this type of alarmism. And unfortunately, it's become a global moneymaker if you pay attention to the news. Sadly, scaring people about the weather has become big business. But how true is any of this? Well, with this actual story, I mean, come on, is this Al Gore-worthy material? Dr. Roy Spencer, who actually has an education in atmospheric sciences, points out that Paul Beckwith's background with a master's degree is actually in laser optics, which really has no bearing on himself calling himself a climate system scientist. He goes on to suggest that neither Beckwith nor Scribbler really know what they're talking about, since they are ignoring what is already known about meteorology and climate, which are actually two separate things. As far as the jet streams mixing, he cleared this up pretty easily. Quote, "There is frequently cross-equatorial flow at jet stream altitudes, and that flow can connect up with a subtropical jet stream, but it has always happened and always will happen with or without the help of humans. Sometimes the flow connects up with each other and makes it look like a larger flow structure is causing the jet stream to flow from one hemisphere to the other, but it's in no way unprecedented. Unquote, drop the mic. Spencer also points out closing remarks to Beckworth's blog that surely shows his true intentions with his alarmist article. And Beckworth's article says, quote, "We must declare a global climate emergency. Please consider a donation to support my work." Unquote. What a way to end out your blog. Well, Spencer, as I mentioned, kind of cleared this up with some facts about science and facts about climatology. But he is what's called by many a global warming skeptic, which is kind of the skeptical organizations don't like that term, because many skeptics actually, they do believe in global warming, man-made global warming. So what they've kind of changed that, or would they rather have it called a climate denier. And even those who are hardcore climate change advocates have shunned the statements by Scribler and Beckworth, stating that what they said is unsupported, unscientific, is actually very normal. Now, for me, I've always been in the middle of this, and I've read stuff on both sides of the argument. And I've always been somebody who's denied all this stuff. But, you know, the science is speaking for it, and there is something happening here on Earth. But, you know, are we the cause of all of it? I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think we are influencing things on a scale. I think as humans, we need to be a little bit more responsible. But I think looking back 200-300 years ago versus what we're doing now, as a whole, when you step back objectively and look, we're much more responsible than what we have been. We've been doing a lot of improvements. We're spewing out less garbage than what we ever have. As a whole, now there are countries that are doing worse things than ever before, but you know, it's the Earth is constantly changing. It's constantly doing what it does, and whether we can really affect that huge cycle of stuff, I don't think we'll ever really know that, unless we do something completely stupid, which it seems like in order to balance everything, we want to do something stupid. Stretch a big net across the sky and try to change the sun hitting the Earth. I think that would be a big mistake. The Earth has been changing for eons, billions of years since it formed. It's never stopped. You know, we have such a limited view of this planet. You know, we only live here 70 years if we're lucky. So we have a very limited worldview. We don't really understand. And even as scientists, we haven't been around that long. A few hundred years, that's not that long to really study a very dynamic billion-year-old system. So what do we know? And I think the Earth is just changing on its own. And right now, it's just getting warmer. But it's actually getting colder in some other places. So go figure that one out. I don't know. I'm going to stay out of it. But I'm in the middle. I think that we are kind of doing some stuff here. But at the same time, I don't think we're completely ruining the planet. So with that being said, let me sidestep that real quick. And we're going to talk about the book of the week before I get too much further to the end of the show. And the book of the week, I wanted to hold off on this until September. There's an event geared towards this guy, September 17th. Through the 18th in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. But I realized I got three books. So I'm going to take the first book that I have that I first read, and it's going to be the book of the week this week. And as we get closer to September, I'll probably run these two other books in celebration of this character, this story, I should say. And the event actually started to take place in November of 1966, and that's The Mothman. So this week's book of the week is The Mothman Behind the Red Eyes, book by Jeff Wamsley. pretty good book. Really the first one that I ever read on the Mothman here. And Behind Red Eyes, it's fantastic. It's mine is actually autographed. It came out in 2005. And I went to the Mothman Festival and got this book and got it autographed. If you've never been to the Mothman Festival, you need to go. You got to find this book. And you can see the there on in the chat room and through social media. I'm going to put that out there too, where you can find this book on Amazon. And it looks like Dita beat me to it with the cover. I had it. She beat me. Good job. Hope everything's going well with your construction at home there in Canada. And yeah, Mothman, Behind the Red Eyes. A very good book. It talks about the beginnings of the Mothman, and it really provides a lot of detail. Photographs, newspaper articles, drawings, stories, and this year is 1966, so do the math. 50 years. It's going to be a big event. That's why I'm saving these books for September. It's going to be a big event. I don't think I'll be able to make it down. I'm going to try. I don't know. Don't quote me. Actually, I can't because I'll be coming home from a cruise. That's right. But this book is fantastic. It's one of my favorite on any kind of cryptid, specific cryptid. I mean, there's so many Bigfoot books. Come on. But this is very well done. I mean, it's a lot of sequential stuff here. And again, like I said, photographs, newspaper clippings, drawings, witness reports, a lot of just so many diagrams and so much information from this time. I mean, Jeff Wamsley's just done such a phenomenal job at documenting this series of events that's become one of the greatest mysteries of the U.S. dealing with a cryptid, an ongoing cryptid. And the 60s, it's been a while, 50 years this year in November. So, I mean, what's really to come of it? But still a fantastic book, a fantastic story. And I highly recommend this, Behind the Red Eyes, Mothman. And one thing I did forget, I'm going to run out of time here to talk about Paranormal Unity, but yeah, predictions. I forgot to mention, I did mention what I predicted this year. I was pretty close. The UFO, the MUFON UFO sighting statistics. Well, the month of July, I've already made a prediction, and you guys can write this down. Total worldwide reports. I'm predicting it's going to go back up slightly to 586 worldwide reports in the month of July. And the U.S., I'm going to say 432 U.S. sightings. So we'll see how close I get. If I'm lucky, if I'm not, I don't know. So write those down. And if you're listening live through Facebook during the week, I usually break down the stories. I set out links through Facebook, which also goes to Twitter. And then if I remember, sometimes I forget, I also go through Google Plus, Paranews Insider Plus Paranews Insider on Google Plus as well. And I talk about the stories that I've covered here this week. And obviously not that many stories, so there's going to be a little bit of other stuff. I may, whenever a story breaks, I also talk about that as well. And also talk about the book of the week. So there'll be a link out to that. About to do some research because I didn't realize that it was that expensive online. So we'll have to look and see if we can find them cheaper for you. So that being said, I want to mention also that I've got a poll going on, paranormal poll, and that's on right now. It's through the website, paranewsinsider.com, right there on the front of the website. You can scroll down and there's a link that goes to this paranormal poll. It's something I've just wanted to attempt to do, to see if there's any kind of interest in this, trying to get the listeners, you guys, involved in the show, and give you a voice, and covering topics. Everyone has an opinion. We know this from looking at social media. Everybody has an opinion, obviously, and I want to give you your chance to let your opinion be heard, be seen and be heard through these paranormal polls, and the ability to also leave comments. So it's not just to vote on something. It's also to leave a comment. And potentially these will turn into blogs. So it'll be your opinion will be cemented in time, I guess, if you want it to be. And the first topic, I've left it up for quite a while, and I unfortunately really haven't pushed it that much. It's my fault, but it's there. And the first question is paranormal unity possible? Yeah, it's been an ongoing topic for a long, long time. And it's one that I've kind of avoided tackling. I've done dozens of blogs on paranormal topics over the years through the Paranormal News Insider website, through the Paranexus Anomalous Research Association website, and my old website through Angel Fire. I used to have a blog that I just wrote there, and I also had blogs before that. So I've been blogging for, my goodness, since the late 1990s. So it's probably been almost 20 years that I've been blogging about the paranormal. So those are probably more than likely gone. Yeah, the paranormal unity is a topic I really have never covered. But I'll be honest with you, I've kind of been a part of that. I think anybody who's involved in the paranormal is wanting to bring some kind of balance or some kind of unity or bring people together some way or some form. I was part of a kind of a startup website. We had a lot of ideas, and I can't remember what we were going to call it, but it never even made it through the planning process because myself and the other gentleman who we were putting our heads together, we couldn't agree on stuff. And I think that's the biggest problem when you're talking about paranormal unity is being on the same page. And paranormal unity itself, it used to be a website, paranormalunity.com. Well, it's for sale. It's failed, I guess. Yeah, it's and it's from the MySpace days, so it's been around for a while. This concept predates that, but it's been around for a while. And paranormal unity is just kind of it's an undefined concept, and that's the problem with it. That's what I have a problem with it. There's no formal, formal definition. Getting along is just not good enough. Sharing information and ideas, okay, that's still general. It's not specific. Sharing what, and how and why. People approach things very differently, and unfortunately, it works for some people to some certain extent. There's a lot of groups out there that do work together, thank goodness. But you see a lot of breakdown beyond that. And the other problem with that is yes, groups do work together, but they work together because they share the same beliefs. They share the same certain things about their... Now, they don't believe in everything. Usually, there are minor differences. But usually, there's some kind of wedge in between these people that they're not completely focused on the same thing. And when you get the wedges become bigger, these are groups that don't want to work together because they don't share those beliefs. And personally, I don't think they should have to. I don't think paranormal unity should be something that's forced or that if people don't work together, you're going to be blacklisted. I've seen that happen. There's nothing wrong with just taking your group and doing what you do. But unification on some level is good. When it's based on peer pressure, if we could up the standards a little bit, if we could eliminate some of the stuff going on through peer pressure, that's the great thing. That's one of the positives that I see with that. But again, there are far more issues I have with the unity concept. Again, the definition, and then you begin to have a hierarchy, because if you have any kind of group or club or idea, there are going to be people that are going to throw out their ideas and what they think is right or wrong. Paranormal Unity used to just be a little sticker that you'd put on your website. Well, I guess not a sticker, but, you know, a banner that you'd put on your website, and that was it. There was no discussion. There was no – it was just a concept. There was no anything about it. It was just, hey, I believe in unity, whatever that means. And then the other problem I had was there was like 20 different Unity groups and all these new things, that were new websites that were popping up of Unity this and Unity that and trying to bring everybody together. Well, if we're trying to bring everybody together, why is everyone trying to do it their own way? Why are there 30 or 40 different websites that are trying to bring everybody together? That's not how it works. The policing of the field, when people are doing things right or wrong, who's to say people are doing things right or wrong? That's one person's view. So you start to see there's a little bit of a breakdown here. When you're talking unification, it becomes ego. It becomes belief systems. It becomes perspective. And then things just kind of break down. And we have to realize, we have to recognize and understand it as well as accept that groups have different goals. Some are just in it for the fun. Some are here for science, are looking for answers. Some are making money with tours, classes, and writing books. Is that right or wrong? I don't know. And why, you know, it shouldn't be our opinion to do that. And really the bottom line here is unity is not a concept. If you think about it, it doesn't always work for everything. Do you get along with everybody in your family? Is your family unified? Well, if not, then why are we trying to unify every single country that has very wide beliefs in the paranormal together, or even here in the U.S., where, again, very diverse. Science also does not use unification. If all scientists were unified, we'd never make any breakthroughs. We have to have barriers. We have to have boundaries. We have to disagree in order to move forward. That's how science works. It's kind of the way we do it is the problem with unity. And I could go on and on about this, but feel free to chime in. Go to paranewsinsider.com. Look for the paranormal poll. Click on the link. Tell me what you think. You can go there and you can vote, and then you can leave your comment. And we can continue to talk about this over the next couple of weeks until we either figure it out, or we agree to disagree, or we find a new topic and we move on. So that being said, big thanks to Cindy again. Can't thank you enough for all the work that you do. And for Dita in the chat room in there, I see that she popped in doing all her hard work. And for Paul that's kind of stepping in to help out while she's absent. And everybody else that's in the chat room and anybody who's listening, either live, or hopefully you're alive, or you're listening to this recorded, and if you're listening to it on iHeartRadio, congratulations, you're probably one of the first. And again, everybody, anybody, anywhere listening to this, I appreciate it, and I know you're downloading this. Thank you. I appreciate it. I really do. So keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the wood, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York. You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.